I meant to mention this last night. Who was Karna found by? Some of you weren't there. Adi Ratha was the chariot driver in Dhritarashtra's army. Doesn't say like which general. Certainly wasn't. Dhritarashtra wasn't on the battlefield, but Adi Ratha, chariot driver, found Karna floating down the river. Okay, so Bhagavatam, Canto 3, final chapter of the canto, chapter 33, and Devahuti is the speaker. 8 chapters later, after having been thoroughly instructed and asking additional questions in the course of Kapila Dev's instructing her, giving the answer to her question, how to get on the other side of undue attachment. She says specifically to family, but it means I and mine, the bodily conception and the extension of bodily conception. My fill in the blank. So he achieved this by sound vibration, and we're doing the same. Now, it's his potency that she says in the frame of her question. It's your Maya that covered me, so you can remove it, so please remove it. And he does so through sound, and because that means there's something that is needed on Devahuti's side besides, you know, presto, he just waves a magic wand and Maya's gone. There's something similarly that we have to do to go beyond that illusory conception of life. You know, that's not bad news, that's good news. There has to be eagerness to receive and also a focus what the goal is. Because we can be eager to receive and have a different goal and hear something else. So, it's not just liberation, but it's being restored to a proper frame of our eternal position as a servant of the Supreme Lord. So, it's a lila, in other words, Devahuti's speaking like she's in Maya, but she's, how is that possible? That's right in the very beginning of Kapila Dev's hearing her question, and he just smiles. My dear mother, why are you speaking like this? It's not possible for you to be in Maya. You're my mother. You're a pure devotee, and you desire that I come as your son, I came as your son, and so you must be speaking like this for the benefit of others. And so I'll give you a nice reply. 8 chapters worth. So her Maya has been dispelled. She's seeing her son as he is, not simply her son. Like, you know, mothers and fathers might see their children not just as my child, but a spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, and we have this nice relationship of serving Krishna together while carrying out the duties of parenthood and childhood and whatever else and whatever else, whatever relationships are. That's possible through sound vibration. Now, what's it like? How do you see things? That's what this chapter is. So she's starting with him, and then she's going to go to other things, how she sees other things. And the first aspect of him that she sees is similar to, it follows the sequence of chapter 3 of Canto 1, where the question, having been asked, describe the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world, the answer starts with the Purusha avatars. So she's looking at her son. She has him on an elevated seat, and she's describing him as the Purusha form of the Lord, the source of everything, and so forth. So that's how she's seeing him. Imagine mothers of children seeing your child like that. So she's in transcendence. Text 4, chapter 33. Interesting. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have taken birth from my abdomen. Oh, my Lord. How is that possible? For the Supreme One, who has in his belly all the cosmic manifestation. The answer is that it is possible. For at the end of the millennium, you lie down on a leaf of a banyan tree, and just like a small baby, you lick the toe of your lotus foot. Purport. At the time of dissolution, the Lord sometimes appears as a small baby lying on the leaf of a banyan tree floating in the devastating water. Therefore, Devahuti suggests, quote, "You're lying down within the abdomen of a common woman like me. It's not so astonishing. You can lie down on the leaf of a banyan tree and float on the water of devastation as a small baby. It is not very wonderful, therefore, that you can lie down in the abdomen of my body. You teach us that those who are very fond of children within the material world and who therefore enter into marriage to enjoy family life with children can also have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their child. And the most wonderful thing is, the Lord himself licks his toe." Paragraph. "Since all the great sages and devotees apply all energy and all activities in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there must be some transcendental pleasure in the toes of his lotus feet. The Lord licks his toe to taste the nectar for which the devotees always aspire. Sometimes the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself wonders how much transcendental pleasure is within himself. And in order to taste his own potency, he sometimes takes the position of tasting himself. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, but he appears as a devotee to taste the sweetness of the transcendental mellow in himself, which is tasted by Srimati Radharani, the greatest of all devotees." So like Queen Kunti, Devahuti similarly is not a rishi. She's not a great scholar. Vipra is not her position. Nonetheless, as a queen from the royal order, she's obviously familiar with Vedic scripture, and specifically even the Puranic portion of the Vedic scripture. Now, just the chronology, this is in a written form about something that took place in Satya Yuga, and the written form certainly came after Satya Yuga. So she had access to that sound vibration before it was written in the oral tradition of the Vedas, because Kshatriyas would be guided by the Brahmanas. Something very similar to Shukadeva Goswami he was able to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, even within the womb, is the synopsis part, even within the womb of his mother, because Vyasadeva was teaching his students, can you come on up, instead of, you know, thank you. Because he was teaching his students, Vyas, and she was in the audience as the pregnant mother, and Shukadev heard. And Shukadev, although he was situated in Brahman realization, his beginning of attraction for Krishna commenced. But because he heard the synopsis, and at least many acharyas, it's not definitive, but the synopsis means the Chaturshloki verses. I've not read anything that says definitively that was the first version that he had to do a rewrite of, and then expanded it and revised it. And in those four verses, it doesn't have any description of the pastimes of Krishna. But that's what he became attracted to. No, excuse me. Excuse me. The chronology is this having completed the Srimad, completed compiling the Vedas, feeling despondent, instruction from Narada, seated in trance, revising and expanding took place before. So when he was narrating, correction, when he was narrating, that's what he, to his students, with his wife in the audience, somehow, Shukadev heard that, and that's what he became attracted to. This is Brahma Vivarta Purana, which Jiva Goswami refers to. So when the appeal was made by Vyas to Shukadev to, your mother's very uncomfortable, please come out of the womb. Well, the Maya that's outside and the Maya that's inside, it's all Maya, but I think that Maya is more difficult. But I have some faith in Krishna. If Krishna can come and give his promise, because he has the power to protect me from Maya, then I'll come out. Now, I don't know, some kind of conversation took place like that. And so Brahma Vivarta Purana says Krishna went. Excuse me, Vyasadeva went from Vyasa's hermitage all the way, gives a number, 1,000 kilometers. It's a long walk. And Krishna came back and gave his promise to Shukadev, you will not fall prey to Maya. And he didn't. Krishna upheld his word, and Shukadev came out. So, even within the womb, apparently, somehow or another, Devahuti had the privilege of hearing Vedic wisdom, not as in a scholarly position or Brahmani position, but in the princess position or queen position, probably both. And she was familiar with this pastime of the Supreme Lord, of lying on a banyan leaf. Banyan leaves are quite large. And lying on his backside with his legs up in the air and sucking his toe. You know, that's a child, a little infant may do that, and that's cute. But Krishna's doing that is more than cute. It's an indication of, as Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, his Krishna's appreciation of the special feature of his lotus feet. Now, that's not to say that other parts of Krishna's body don't have the same sweetness. Only his feet are sweet. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti, and he can suck his thumb, like children sometimes do, and that'll do it too. Or any part of his body can do anything any other part of his body can do. That's his transcendental body. And for that matter, he doesn't need to put that part of his body in his mouth to taste it. But it's a pastime, a human-like feature of him. This is one of the features that Kunti's prayers speaks about. The Uddhava's speaking about Krishna speaks about what are the Vedas speak about, and that is the human-like, emphasis on human-like, nature of Krishna's pastimes. And for that matter, very similarly, the human-like pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. The charm of both Leela, there's part of it is, it looked like us. You know, Lord Srinidhe, forget it, doesn't look like us, or Vamana, Matsya, Kurma, Parashuram, you know, so the human-like aspect of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes enhances the charm of his pastimes. And it's specific because the boon that Ravana requested, because of his pride, he just excluded humans. And this was part of the rationale of when the personality of God had agreed to appear, he would appear as the son of Dasarath, as a human. Not that the personality Godhead can't do anything, but the personality God upholds the word of his devotee. So he does his pastimes in such a way he doesn't violate their word. He upholds their word. So he appeared in a human form, and his pastimes are human-like. And there's, again and again and again, the reference in Krishna's pastimes that he can transgress the humanness, no problem. And from time to time, Ram does and Krishna does. And there are other aspects where it's very human-like. And that's, again, part of the charm. But he's not just the best amongst us. He's transcendental. His body is transcendental, his pastimes are transcendental, his potencies are transcendental, everything about him is transcendental, and therefore hearing about him in Srimad Bhagavatam, or even simply hearing his name, the fullness of him is there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we all know from Shikshastakam, says this, Nija Sarva Shaktis. Each and every one of the names of Krishna have all of Krishna's potencies. Not only the feet of his name, but him, his name. It's the fullness of Krishna in every aspect, everything. Material, spiritual, everything. Just like Bhagavad Gita. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. Krishna and his name are none different than Krishna, that sound vibration, Krishna is everything. And everything is within Krishna. And same with his pastimes. It's important. Any one of his pastimes carries Krishna. And Krishna has different aspects. We can say Krishna is fullness, but you know, some of his pastimes don't exhibit his fullness, like his Purusha avatar does not exhibit the fullness. But it's not different than Krishna, it's an aspect of Krishna and part of his fullness. So even when seeing Kapiladev, she's seeing that aspect of Kapiladev, not Kapiladev in his fullness, but within Kapiladev is everything that she says is within Kapiladev. There's a... I can't resist making reference to the first verse of Namastakam. Namastakam is a set of 8 prayers by Rupa Goswami, glorification of the holy name. Boy, does Rupa Goswami know how to glorify the holy name. Not in Namastakam, but in Vidugdha Madhava. No, Lalita Madhava, the introductory verse is the verse glorifying the holy name. And after hearing that glorification of the holy name, the connoisseur of literature, Ramananda Roy, said, "This isn't poetry. This is a shower of nectar. I've never heard such glorification of the holy name." He's the connoisseur. Like, you know, I've never tasted food cooked like this, or I've never seen the deities decorated like this, or I've never heard a glorification of the holy name like this. For someone that's expert in relishing literature, Ramananda Roy. So, I do not know how much nectar is found in the two syllables, Krishna, then, you know, the tongue, the ear, and the heart. First, in chanting, the tongue vibrates. How much nectar in the sound, as the tongue makes the sound, Krishna? So much nectar, I cannot say. I then wish to have many, many mouths. So you start, then you hear. And there's so much nectar in the sound vibration, Nijasarva Shakti's sound vibration in the name of Krishna. I wish to have millions of ears. It's not sufficient to drink the nectar through the ears. And when that sound vibration enters the chamber of the heart, the mind becomes stunned. And so sometimes the sound doesn't go to our heart, it's just we're still somewhere else. And when the mind becomes stunned, the senses become inert. You know, the bhava, bhakti, one becomes stunned. But it starts with the chanting and then hearing and then letting that sound vibration go to the heart. Such a nice description. It's very, very practical meditation, actually. I like that particular meditation and chant while chanting. But in the Namastakam, it begins the holy name of Krishna, the lotus, the tips of the toes of the lotus feet of the holy name of Krishna are attracted and they're sought by the effulgence coming from the jewel-like perfect expression from the Vedas, the Upanishads. So amongst the Vedas, the Upanishads are sometimes described as jewels, like the jewels that are produced by the desire tree, the kalpa vriksha of the Vedas. And they're the jewels, and the jewels have effulgence, and the effulgence of the jewels are reaching for the tips of the toes of the lotus feet of the holy name, Krishna. Isn't that nice poetry? So the Upanishads are exalted amongst the knowers of the Vedas. Rupa Goswami, who is also the knower of the Vedas, is saying really the purpose of them is to shine light, lead to the lotus feet of Krishna. And Krishna and his name are not different, and as Krishna has lotus feet, His name has lotus feet, and even the tips of the toes of his lotus feet are sought after by the effulgence of the jewel-like Upanishads within the desire tree of the Vedas. A fantastic poetry. So for us, the main access principle means to access Krishna through the name. And then following from the name comes the other form, qualities, pastimes. They become revealed in time. Doesn't mean we don't see the deity form of the Lord. It's our other expressions, manifestations of forms of Krishna within paintings as well. We see them. But we won't see them properly unless and until the chanting is done properly, or say it the other way. To the degree that we do the chanting properly, then we'll see properly. Our other sense, because the mind then becomes cleansed, Chaitra Darpana Marjanam, and then the senses of action and the senses of knowledge acquiring similarly become purified. So now, back to this little expression. Just reading the verse, I knew Prabhupada was going to go there, so he does. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, also wanted to taste the three things. The love that Radha feels for him, the happiness in that love that she feels for him, how she appreciates the qualities in Krishna. So he appeared as Radharani for that purpose. Now, collapsing it down, similarly the Lord, this pastime of sometimes during the period of in between one Manu and the next Manu, there's a partial annihilation, so there's this flood of devastating water, and the Lord, everything else is gone, it's just him. Because everything else has gone into this dissolution state. But there's a banyan leaf, it must be a very special banyan leaf, that it doesn't get dissolved also. And he's lying on his back and tasting the toe. So if she's referring to that, Prabhupada's referring to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is how Devahuti is reconciling her understanding of the personality of Godhead as her son lying within her womb, and that's how she reconciles. It's not, for you, it's not a problem. It's not surprising. So she has a certain perspective on the personality of Godhead, her son, that's a little different than the perspective of Kunti, her nephew. For Kunti keeps saying over and over again, I find this bewildering. Devahuti is saying, I don't find it bewildering. You can do this, you certainly can do that. That's just another variation on the theme of what you like to do. And so I'll just end with this. Say, whatever Krishna wants to do, it becomes possible without his having to do anything, just by his various potencies. Like expanding as the Purusha avatars, and when I started to understand this, I found it very, very interesting. This term, Yoga Nidra, Mahavishnu is in Yoga Nidra. No, Nidra means sleep. But, you know, we hear that his sleep is not like our sleep. Our sleep is we're in ignorance, and his sleep is not ignorance. There's no ignorance in him. It indicates specifically that Rama Devi is not manifest outside, but she's inside, and he's enjoying eternal pastimes with her within. That's what Yoga Nidra means. And if he wants, he can manifest her outside. But when you see paintings of Mahavishnu, we never see his consort. He's got a consort. It's his internal potency, but she's within. He's in yoga nidra. She's still serving him, and they're having their loving exchanges, eternal pastimes, Prabhupada's language. Now, their pastimes are not like Vrindavan pastimes. They're different pastimes, because the Lord is everything. He's complete in everything, so his pastimes are different with Ramadevi than with Krishna and Radharani, or Sita and Ram, and Kardamahuni and Devahuti. The pastimes are different of the Lord appearing. Of course, in Kapila Dev, he remains brahmachari. It doesn't mean he doesn't have internal potency. It's just manifesting in a different way. So the things that the Lord does, it's just an exhibition of his potencies. As we mentioned yesterday, or reference was made in the purport yesterday to this, Natasya Karyam Karanam Chavidyate Sobhaviki Balak Jnana Kriyacha. He who has nothing to do does everything with Swabhaviki through the exhibition of his potencies. So whether it's lying in yoga nidra, or the process of creation, or the expansion of the various Purusha avatars, and they do what they do, and then the investing in powers, his powers in Lord Brahma to create, and then the investing of his powers in Prakriti to do what Prakriti does, and demigods to do what demigods do, and without that investing of potency, it's right there in this third canto. The demigods are there, Prakriti is there, and nothing's happening. They know what they're supposed to do, but they can't do it because the potency of the Supreme Lord is required. So they pray to him. It's in the third canto. Help. And so he helps. And without his help, the demigods can't, but material nature can't. Sorry, mechanistic science, but it's not going to happen without the personality of Godhead investing powers in Prakriti and the demigods. Even the living entities have desires and so forth, and the laws of nature are there. It's not going to happen. So it's just various potencies. And then the potency of the Vaikuntha planets and the potencies in the various ways of Krishna's exhibition of his pastimes in Dwaraka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. It's just the exhibition of his potencies. And the fullness of those exhibition of his potencies are manifested uniquely in Vrindavan. And therefore, this special attraction from the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for Krishna's feature in Vrindavan. We don't diminish Krishna's pastimes out of Vrindavan. That's part of the fullness of Krishna and his loving exchange and his nature. He's full. He's everything. So we don't, you know, this is lesser, this is greater. We don't do that. We have special appreciation at the same time. Perfect, more perfect, most perfect kind of an idea. And the whole of Brihat Bhagavatamrita is exactly that. Both part one and part two. Explicitly. When Narada is in search for the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy, he goes from one to the next, and towards the end, Sanatana Goswami, in his commentary, says, actually, they're all perfect. It's not that this one's less or that one's greater. They're all perfect. We shouldn't make the mistake of the Brahmana that was worshipping his Shalagram Shila by the side of Dashashvamedha Ghat was down here, and the others are up there and up there and up there. That would be offensive. Don't do that. Don't make such offense. careful to guard against offense. We appreciate them for their pure devotion. And then there's perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So while exalting the residents of Vrindavan, we shouldn't poo-poo the Pandavas or any other exalted Vaishnav. To appreciate the wonderfulness of Krishna's exhibiting his potencies in their fullness in Vrindavan doesn't diminish the purity of the love of Krishna with his other associates that are engaged in his service. I remember discussing Brihat Bhagavatamrita in sometime in the past with one devotee who was from a Sri Vaishnava background, and he became like violently irritated to say that Rukmini is, you know, lesser because from his Sri Vaishnava upbringing, that's penultimate. The goddess of fortune is Rukmini. And how can the love of Rukmini be considered to be lesser than anybody in anything? So it's the intent is not to say the love of Rukmini is lesser. How can we say that? It's a different type of love. And the love that she feels for the personality of Godhead, she has appreciation for, it's in various places, but she has appreciation for the love that Srimati Radharani has. It doesn't mean that she wishes to change her love to the love of Radharani. It's her in a certain mood, in a certain manner, and it's perfect, pristine, full, transcendentally glorious. And, not but, and the love of Radharani is so special, even amongst the residents of Vrindavan and so forth. So, just speaking of this, so that we should be careful not to offend while we're appreciating the love of the residents of Vrindavan. And particularly the love of the gopis, and particularly the love of Radharani. We don't belittle others. That's an offense. And in being neophyte, it's easy to make offenses. Really easy. Don't even have to try, it just comes natural to us. We should be careful not to. And similarly, names of the Supreme Lord. This Maha Mantra is very special, and somebody like another mantra, that's fine. We don't belittle. We have special appreciation because it's mentioned in the Upanishads, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chanted the Maha Mantra in the way that he chanted the Maha Mantra, and we're happy doing that. We don't belittle others. At the same time, we want to be within ourselves, at least, very careful to understand the special position of the Maha Mantra, while we may have other, you know, appreciation of other mantras, other glorifications of the Lord, the names of the Supreme Lord. They're also wonderful. Mahaprabhu chanted other mantras, Hariharaya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha, etc. Gopal Govindaram Shri Madhusudan. He chanted those also. So they have a special place for us as followers of Mahaprabhu. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so many nice songs that are just glorification of names. Because it's following the teaching. Nam Nam Akari Bahuda. Bahuda doesn't just mean, you know, lots. Unlimited numbers. How many names? Unlimited numbers. And each and every one of those names are invested with transcendental potency. So, I'm just covering some ground that it's intended, I'm doing this, to be, it's intended to, while we're appreciating something, not to diminish the importance of something else. And there's a neophyte, immature tendency to do that, and it's not so good. It easily leads to groupism, us and them, we do this, and you know, they don't do this, so they're not okay. While appreciating our good fortune, receiving what we've received, it's nice to honor those who have received something else, and they're on their path at the same time. And doesn't diminish our appreciation for others, doesn't diminish the gift that we've been given and our special appreciation for it. And our enthusiasm to encourage people to chant the Hare Krishna mantra with us. Not pushing something on somebody else, as some people criticize. It's inviting others into this wonderful process, while at the same time respecting. Okay, so see if there's any discussion. Yeah.
I was going to ask this question for tomorrow's Q&A, but today you mentioned three different things that just relate directly to my questions.
Okay.
Today. So I think the base question or concern that has been manifesting for me is that I struggle to see the holy name as a person.
Hmm.
So today you mentioned one, that our main access to Krishna is through the holy name. Then the second thing is the description of Krishna lying on a banyan tree sucking his toe.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is the first verse of Namashtami,
yeah,
the tips of the toes off your lotus feet. So whenever I thought of this first verse of Namashtika, I actually always imagined, visualized baby Krishna lying on the banyan tree,
mm,
sucking his toes.
Mm.
But then, so that is like a personal, you know, it's like...
It's a very, very personal.
But I honestly struggled, until I got that visualization, I struggled that, what does it mean that the tips of the toes of the holy name? Like, it's always like a mantra vibration.
Well, you want to hear something on that topic? Or you have a wrap-up under the question?
I can wrap up the question by saying that basically it's a struggle for me often to be able to close my eyes and chant, because I need to like either visualize the deities or see the deities in order to see the holy name as a person. But
well, no harm, and there are other methods besides that one.
Mm.
The benefit of what you just described, what helps you, has as a goal the name as a person, but part of the you know, whether it's this path, that path, whatever spokes lead to the hub, it gets you to the hub. And the hub is, we were discussing this in central New Jersey at our Japa retreat, that they, from what they heard during that weekend, during 64 round day, they felt really energized for the first time since they've become a devotee in feeling the name and Krishna are not different. And before, as you were describing, their struggle was the name and the person are non-different. So now before the form comes the name. Now, to appreciate that the name as a person that has feet and has toes on his feet, for you it's visualization, for someone else it's which is perfectly fine, for someone else it's something else which is perfectly fine. It's just they didn't identify what it was that they heard, but just through sound vibration that one is, the fact is disclosed. the name is none different, and the person has form with feet. So the name has feet because the name is none different. So for this other individual who I was discussing with, it's while chanting, meditating, accepting the fact and letting it enter into the chamber of the heart where the mind becomes stunned and the senses become inert, and then the real focus is there. The name is Krishna in his fullness. Through that doorway or medium, then the form of Krishna. So another is, as you said, you visualize and then the form of Krishna. But can just be from the heart level, the acceptance that the name and Krishna are not different. And chanting, appealing, calling to Krishna through his name. It makes it really simple. We don't have to do something else. It just, it's within the name. So the two things, just to summarize. Visualization is fine. Just hearing is also fine. The goal is the same. The name and the person named are none different. And the name and the person has form, and the form has feet, and the feet has toes. And my sense from that poetic imagery of Namastakam is it's poetic imagery to help us appreciate the name and the person are not different. The name is the form, and the form is the name, or has a name, and the name is none different than the form. To get us out of the entanglement of the complexity of bodily conception and affinity for matter and the whole shebang of material existence, the process needs to be very simple. To get out of that complexity, you need simplicity. And the heart that is simple can take shelter of something that's simple. The heart that's complex can't take shelter of something simple. It's got to be complex. I can't relate to it. It's too simple. But the heart has to come to the place of simplicity. And so chanting is so simple, most many people have a hard time. Mind wants to go here and there, and it's just so. But when the mind becomes peaceful instead of restless, then one can access the fullness of Krishna, which is then revealed in his form from the name. So whatever the spoke that you go to the hub, make sure you just go to the hub and don't get, you know, lost in the spoke itself and think that's it. It's the objective. We want to get to that place where Krishna and his name are not different, however we get there. And that's in his fullness. You know, so it leads to his pastimes. Name, form, quality, and pastimes. As the Goswamis were able to do, chant, and they enter into Krishna's pastimes. Not only see his form and appreciate his qualities and visualize or whatever, his pastimes, enter into the pastimes. So the potency of the name has all of that. And the name is person. Something else? Yes?
Maharaj, my question is related to yesterday's answer that you gave related to the eternal time. Maharaj, you mentioned that in the material world we relate the things in the form of events.
Yes.
In chronological order.
Yeah.
So in the spiritual world, the time is eternal.
Yes.
And there is no sequence of events that happen.
Good question. Jiva Goswami has an answer.
Right. So is it that way in the scriptures, the things are described in the form of events just to make it easier for us to
no.
understand?
Jiva Goswami says, he answers your question, you know, a different question, but the how are there events without time? What's an eternal event? It's another way of asking the question. So his answer is, although time is eternal, there's the sense by Yogamaya's influence of the passage of time. It's the internal potency allowing for Krishna's enjoyment. And Krishna's enjoyment is enhanced by events. So as for Krishna's enjoyment, there's the sense of passage of time, but there's no passage of time. Because time destroys things. Right? And in the spiritual world, nothing is destroyed, but there's events.
Right. And those events are in sequence.
Yes, and it's enabled by the internal potency where there's the sense of passage of time so that there can be events. But there's no destruction. No creation, no maintenance, no destruction. There's no passage of time. But there's events. It's quite mystical. And these events here have past, present, and future. And so they're ephemeral. They're insubstantial. There's no more meaning than bubbles on the ocean.
Beyond our comprehension at this stage.
You bet. At the same time, those things that are beyond our comprehension or inconceivable, to some degree, according to the purity of consciousness and the source of broadcasting of the message of transcendence, we can get some inclination, some insight, some little partial appreciation of that which is otherwise, you know, in fullness inconceivable. We can conceive of the inconceivable by descending mercy, by purity of heart to whatever degree, and the source of sound vibration being a pure source of sound vibration. That which is inconceivable can be conceived in part by descending mercy. Something else? Yeah?
As you said, chanting is simple for simple-hearted.
Yeah.
And mind is very peaceful. But when mind is restless, how do we calm the mind?
How do we calm the mind? Practice. Krishna says, constant practice and detachment. Doesn't he say that? Chanchala hi mana Krishna balavat. Mind is... Krishna says yes. But it's possible to become peaceful by constant practice and detachment. Detachment means gradually, progressively, not suddenly or artificially, but gradually become attached to Krishna. And then the mind can become detached from matter. So it's incremental, progressively, step by step by step. What's very important for, you know, in response to your question, is not just that we want to be peaceful. Of course, that's a nice desire too. But we're almost guaranteed going to have a wrong idea of what peaceful is. Like go to the forest and live in a cave or, you know, near Jan Bhajan or something like that and be peaceful. That's not recommended. Particularly for us, it's not recommended. So what's recommended? That we take up the sadhana practice with the right understanding of the purpose. to awaken our desire to please Krishna, whatever we do. And we take that awakened desire to whatever degree it becomes awakened in whatever we do. And then we go back and do some more hearing and chanting and awaken the desire. Just progressively apply the process of cleansing, then take it into the field of our practical activity. And somebody could say, well, gee whiz, when I go to my practical activity, I become all agitated again. And then when I sit down to do my sadhana, I'm still agitated about the stuff that happened when I was doing my practical activity. Whatever that is, you know, whatever that is, without listing. But that's the assignment. Perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. And the means to always think of him and to properly perform prescribed duty is sadhana bhakti. So that's how. We cultivate constant practice and detachment. Signed up? Okay. Good. We'll put you on the list. Yes?
I also have a question about chanting.
About chanting.
You mentioned about this visualizing.
She mentioned.
Yes, she mentioned about the visualizing of the deities.
I didn't say deity. She said the form of Krishna on the back side sucking his toe on a banyan leaf. But you can apply that to the deities too.
And the other is the hearing the sound vibration. Is it also possible that while we are chanting, we are also praying at that same time?
Well, it depends on what you're doing, how you manifest praying. Meaning, you know, the mind is a binary processor. You can't do two things at the same time. I mean, Krishna can, but we can't. So, if the praying is a mood, then you can. In a prayerful mood, you call the name. Then you can. And even the message of the prayer can be in your mind as you're praying, because it's the mood.
Okay. And that's exactly that would be the question. Okay. So if we're praying, then sometimes I'm listening my heart, sometimes get distracted from the oral reception.
Sure, you go to the other thing. So that's you try to avoid that. But like anything, it takes practice to perfect. So make sure you're headed in there, you have the right goal, and the path that you're following is going to reach the goal. So if you get off the path, you get back on the path. You go back to the. You do the refinements and fine adjustments till you're like on the center of the road, the path. The purpose is absorption in the name. The purpose isn't becoming, you know, having the mind attracted to a particular prayer. The purpose of the prayer is one thing. So stay focused on the one thing. And if you get off, you just, you know, recalibrate again. Refine. And then the one thing is enhancing the main thing. The secondary thing is enhancing the main thing. Yes?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj, like you mentioned about not making offenses.
Mm.
And I was just thinking from the perspective, like while we are careful not to criticize and people come into Krishna consciousness, many times they go into different organizations and they come and, you know, while we don't criticize what they're doing, it somehow becomes an inherent approval kind of a thing with what processes they are following, and it tends to be like they contrast and compare, and many times it's easier because it's only a 1 hour commitment in another place, while Krishna consciousness is like a paradigm shift, it's, you know, our life changing.
I understand.
So how do we approach situations like that then?
Depends on the relationship. that you have with that person. If you don't have a well-established, open relationship with that person, a kind of rule of thumb is two things. Just work on the relationship and be a good example of what Krishna consciousness is without saying this versus that. Just be exemplary Vaishnava. That speaks volumes more than anything you might say just by your character. And people will see that. At least tuned in people will see that. Or people that know how to move from their heart can feel it. You know, this person or this group of people, they're genuine, and they can experience the other also. They're just arm twisters if it's the other. They're the us and them people. And I don't want to be part of the us and them thing. Oh, whatever, you know, different people. So when you have the relationship, then you have the foundation for understanding, for their heart to be open and your words to be accepted, and you also understand the other person and better than if you just said something without understanding the person. In doing that, there's some degree of risk. You know, and some degree of risk might include I also might become influenced in, you know, by some wishy-washiness. Yatomattatopat or something. Impersonalism. And lose focus on the descending mercy that Krishna has provided. So I have to be cautious when I'm doing that. But not in a condescending way, in a service mood. So it's just, again, it's this refinement of the purpose of what we do. It's easy to get lost in the purpose of what we do while we're doing something. Real, it's too easy. Therefore, everything starts from how we chant the holy name. The consciousness that we carry as we're engaged in connecting with the holy name. Most important of all, you know, what to do in situations like what you described. Yes?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Just a question again related to the chanting. So in a prayerful mood, is it appropriate to, while you're chanting, pray to Krishna to help you develop more of a taste for the chanting?
Absolutely. So now, the words, just to refine the response to the question, it's not so much the words that you just spoke are, you know, dancing in your mind while you're chanting. In other words, the chanting is in the background or the front is, you know, the words you just spoke. It's the other way around. So the attraction for Krishna is in the foreground, and this other is more of a mood. A calling in that mood. You can think of the words, but it's in the background. It's in the foreground. Is otherwise, it's if you do the other way, within 10 seconds, your mind is going somewhere else. It's just boom, 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 boom. And then you go, oh, I'm somewhere else. Let me go back. Keep the goal in the front. Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
The bonus Prabhupada Ki Jai.